Hello? Hello?
Hi.
Hi. Have you seen this new Firefox Hello thing?
No, I haven't looked at that at all.
It just appeared. It doesn't seem to work. It has a
Free video and voice calls.
grinning blue bird balloon for a logo. Anyway, I had an important insight walking back from the bookstore just now. And it's one that's been building for a really long time, sort of the unconscious sort of trying to nudge me into seeing it, putting the pieces together little by little. But unfortunately, it's both. I mean, the central character of it is really easy to relate, but it sounds ridiculous. And worse, it sounds like a stereotypical schizophrenic idea, like not even a very creative one. But I'd like to tell it to you if you don't mind having your eyebrows narrowed and your arms crossed for most of the conversation.
No, not at all.
Right. Well, and you might as well watch the red balloon with the sound off while I'm talking to you because there's not really any words in it.
Right.
I saw it as a kid and it seemed so archetypal, I assumed it was something that everyone saw as a kid, that you just grew up with. But in retrospect, it is an artsy French short film, and probably nearly no one saw it as a kid unless they were forced to in school for some reason. It did win an Oscar. I think it's the only short film that's ever won an Oscar for Best Picture.
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly heard about it. I don't know. I guess take a look.
But, it's a film that I think has inspired a lot of sort of unconscious backlash because there's something kind of subtly creepy about it. And I've come to think about balloons in general. But in particular, in the red balloon, the way it's done is with. Essentially, they have a balloon on a thread or a bit of fishing line or something like that, so they can move it around. And they have a string hanging down from it that's like a short, fat string to just sort of look like a balloon string. But it's not very convincing if you're an adult and you're thinking about how the film is made. I mean, it's like game show parodies level suspension of disbelief, practically. So, as a kid, even unconsciously, there's this uncanny valley thing because you can interpret it as this balloon moving around and behaving intelligently and having emotions and so on. And you can very easily also see it as just a lifeless helium balloon being jerked around on a string. So, there's that. But balloons are. Balloons make two noises, right? One is they pop, they go bang. Loud, unexpected sounds are said to be one of the natural human fears that can't be conditioned away. And the other thing they do is they make that hissing noise when they're slowly deflating, which is also the noise a snake makes. I remember once having a dream that the ceiling of the underground house, which was the main room of it, is a big dome, was just crawling with all these ceiling parasites, and they were mostly snakes, just curled up on there, sort of hanging down, passive predation, that sort of thing. Very, very unpleasant. Not really a nightmare though, because it was more a matter of like, what are we gonna do about all these things? And in fact, we argued about what to do about them so long that when I looked again, they were all gone. It was like they were impatient, and so they
they sort of left while we were arguing. And I wasn't exactly like disappointed, but it was a little bit like, oh, oh, the story kind of left without us. Sort of reminds me of Wilson's Dying Alone snakes. The snakes that bite you, and then as you die, they slither away, so you die alone.
Yeah.
Like that. But again, there's this association with balloons. And in particular, I think the ceiling snakes were Susie's version of balloons because that is where balloons end up, on the ceiling. I remember once waiting in the entryway of some large store, like a furniture store or something, just, a really big, tall entryway area, and there was a balloon up on the ceiling of it, and I remember just being overwhelmed by the desolation of it. Do you remember the in Caverns of Zooks, the little balloon ride sequence?
Oh, where is that? It's from, I don't remember where it takes you, but I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I watched a playthrough of it to find it because it was really emotionally significant to me at the time. And
Yeah, I know how you
it's
mean about that.
amazingly short. It's like a second and a half long.
But it feels like an enormous step
Yeah.
taken.
And it's so trivial. And I also remember the music for it being played only at that point in the game. It's actually played one other point, which is over the end credits, after it's been revealed that the whole thing was just a computer simulation and you're trapped in some dystopian futuristic jail. It doesn't even end, it just ends with game over. It just says game over. Real nice. But, the balloon. And then in particular, the red balloon. And it's a very spherical balloon as well. It's not really stereotypical balloon shape as we think of it. It's closer to being just a generic round red object, which, could be various things, a clown nose, an apple, etc. But if you just sort of feel out the allegorical associations of the various different things, it gets a little sinister pretty fast. Oh, another little bit of this was, while I was working on the notes for Impossible Maze, which never got made, I remember writing about a fictional book that they would find that I couldn't really tell you what the significance of it was, but it was called The Book of Hobgoblins. And the chapters were all red things, like the red tree, the red snake, the red waterfall, etc. I think unconsciously I was searching for the red balloon, but it didn't come to mind because I was thinking of archetypal things in a sense that didn't include modern things like balloons. But the red tree, the red snake. And then if you think of a snake up on the ceiling or, caught in a tree like balloons sometimes get, I think I have actually a few pictures of balloons caught in trees or kites. The association with a snake in a tree is the Garden of Eden. And then, of course, it has an apple, which is another red round object. So this is very, it's sort of orbiting at a very plausibly deniable distance, but it's orbiting the concept of Satan. And but portrayed as a in the short film as a heroic figure or a martyr, tragic, just trying to be this boy's friend essentially, and then spoiler alert, the balloon dies at the end. But it's
I'm guessing it's relevant that I just spent a lot of time under umbrellas, but go on.
Well, and umbrellas are complicated. I don't know quite how to deal with that in the association. Raindrop anagrams to predator, though. Or no, teardrop anagrams to predator. But a teardrop upside down is like a pointy tooth. I could pop a balloon, so I don't think that's centrally relevant, though. I'm not sure. Umbrellas complicate things. Amaya was supposed to be red herself. Occasionally, when the thing was planned to be in color. Usually it was black and white, so it wasn't an issue. Which, come to think of it, made a book about colored things a little weird. But it was going to have spot color. Like we did, actually, in Adventure Kids, from artificial light sources only. Like the lights on the police car and the readout on the stove and that sort of thing. Do you notice the production logo?
I mean, I saw it. I didn't notice anything about it.
Do you remember what it was?
A couple of letters and outline font.
Janus Films.
Oh, Janice. Okay. Wow.
The
I don't know how I
two-faced
got that.
god. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen the Janus Films logo before.
This is Janice's month, I suppose, January. But there's this like severe internal conflict in me that's all on the unconscious side about balloons. Like, part of me hates balloons and part of me loves balloons, and neither part is like consciously connects to anything sensible. I don't know. It's like a conflict between different fingers of my left hand. The bride has this balloony aspect too, or like hanging from the ceiling thing. Chandelier. Spanish for chandelier is, well, I forget the term, but it translates to spider of lights. Which is a very nicely creepy term. Is sort of reminiscent of Stephen King's It, you know, because it had the giant spider form, and then I think like the true form of it was called the Dead Lights. They were just these lights. Although the term Dead Lights, although this is attested by very few sources, so I'm not really sure how widespread the usage is actually a term, a nautical term for heavy shutters that you close over windows during a big storm or whatever. Which makes me think of Room 11 from Maze, with the locked doors sort of where your eyes and ears would be if the cage was over your head. But in any case, it also takes the form of a clown with the red nose, and he has balloons, and they explode in blood, and they're just, I've never actually seen the film, just clips from it, but not really a positive association with balloons either. And there's that weird Archie thing. Did I tell you about that?
Well, I've heard plenty of weird Archie things, but no, I don't think so.
What weird Archie things are there?
I mean, Archie is typically a good target for any number of, you know.
Japes.
Yeah, sure.
He seems kind of like lame to the point of being a stock character you would use just if you wanted to pick something from the past that couldn't stand up to modern humor.
Yeah.
Like Porgy and Mudhead, or Andy Anders was the Super Fun Pack version. Remember him?
Oh, no, I don't.
He had a PSA. A public service message from Super Fun Pack Comics. Andy Anders, America's favorite teenager, hyphenated, for over 60 years, and a comic strip character your parents and teachers think is hip and with it, says, "Drugs are uncool. You don't need drugs to be popular. Enjoy music. Feel great. Have lots of fun. Be cool. Have more energy. Be more creative. Enlarge your emotional palette. Get incredible insights. Laugh really hard. See really freaky lights and colors. Be hilarious. Make you enjoy sex more. Have even more fun. Be just like your rock star heroes." Anyway, Archie Andrews anagrams to reached inside and also to sewer arachnid. I haven't figured out Jughead Jones. His real name is actually Forsyth Pendleton Jones III, which is impossibly long. The J's make it difficult, too. He has a little sister named Jellybean, although her real name is actually Forsythia. A late addition to the strip. Sometime in the last decade, I think. No one seems to understand where his hat came from either, or why he has an S on his shirt. He's just baffling. But so, yeah, balloons. In particular, the balloon music from Caverns of Zoox just made me incredibly sad. Like, one of the saddest points that I remember, I think maybe actually only eclipsed by how sad I was earlier today. And I don't understand where it comes from. It has something to do with Susie being sort of tied up with the idea of the balloon. But, I don't know. And then Andrew and Vincent. They came in a hot air balloon. In the Impossible Maze notes. Semi based on the two guys in bear suits who show up in the hot air balloon. In Ordinary Jack. Which Jack is a false prophetic vision of. Actually, it's orchestrated by his Uncle Frank. Or, no, his Uncle Parker. Uncle Frank is a character from Home Alone. No balloons in that I recall. Though there's Santa, of course. Which anagrams to Satan. And it's a sort of anagram that, you know, like God and dog, people notice pretty much inevitably, just because it's so obvious, and so they think there's not really anything to it, but I mean, is it really coincidental that our most reviled and our most beloved mythological figures have names that are a direct anagram of each other, and both wear red? And, I mean, that there's a lot of overlap here, you know? They both have that sort of, you know, omnipresent thing going on. Satan is everywhere, right? It's like the devil's in the details, and Santa knows when you're sleeping and knows when you're awake, and la-di-da, these are
more than superficial similarities, I think. The thing is, it's like, on the conscious side, we have a way of keeping opposites separate, you know, of drawing them apart and recognizing that they're distinctly different things, even though we associate them with each other. The unconscious doesn't really do that. And so things like red and green, or Satan and Santa, or love and hate,
fact and fiction,
right, they're connected. In many cases connected more directly than they're connected to any other concept, because opposites are so strongly associated. Black and white are certainly more connected with each other than with anything else.
Truth and falsehood.
Well, I mean, the thing is, some of these things have much stronger sort of connotational halos than others. Falsehood doesn't really have much of a halo compared to, say, red, you know?
Yeah.
I'd say red, your mind comes up with a million associations all at once. When I say falsehood, it's sort of, you know, it's a little bit more esoteric. So they tend to be things that are difficult to work with. Complicated. Red is also a homophone of red, which is a homograph of reed. Left is the opposite of right, and an upside down L looks like a lowercase r, but it's actually a gamma, which is pronounced G. But a lot of people don't really know the Greek alphabet very well. Additionally, the uppercase version of the letter R looks nothing like the lowercase version. But this is a vertical flip, and the flip that you're supposed to make with left and right is horizontal. And a flipped L horizontally becomes a J, sort of. Sort of like a J. If you flip the L into an R in red, you get lead. Red balloon becomes lead balloon. Or if you change it up a little, Led Zeppelin. Which, in fact, derives its name from the term lead balloon. Lead is in the element. It was changed to three letters so that people wouldn't accidentally pronounce it lead, supposedly. But it also makes it so that if you flip the L upside down, it turns back into red. None of this goes anywhere that I'm aware of. It's just, this is the shape of the space. It's very, very weird and confusing. It doesn't break down into simple opposites and, you know, how you could draw a nice little graph with quadrants or anything like that. It's a mess.
Well, then we kind of already assumed that from the beginning. Most people seem to think it's a mess.
Well, there's schools of thought. A lot of people seem to believe that there's a simple unconscious order to things. They try to shoehorn it into that. Binaries, generally.
I feel like stereotypical wisdom is giving those up.
Stereotypical wisdom is sort of unraveling, I think. Like, conventional wisdom, I mean. I don't know. I replied to a schizophrenic on Reddit today who did the same thing Dan Mitchell did, where they sort of ape a folksiness while they're being condescending.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get that. I don't do that. But it seems to be a trope used by schizophrenics is to pretend to be a source of folksy wisdom, I guess, just so they don't have to really support what they're saying, essentially. Or make it sound more coherent. And also so that they can sort of smoothly slip back and forth into just sort of insultingly mocking the imagined thought process of their ideological enemies, which include everyone, usually. But he had a... I mean, we had some overlap, actually, in our ideas, but he had a very negative take. Like, one of the things that we crossed over on was that he also identifies the fabric of reality when sort of seen from beyond the veil as being made of screaming. I think of it as being a little bit more abstract than negative screaming, but I just, you know, I feel like I should do something with these insights, but I have no idea what to do with them. Have you seen Billy's Balloon by Don Hertzfeldt?
No.
It's about a magic balloon that befriends a boy apparently named Billy. No dialogue or anything. And it basically it lifts him up into the air, into the sky, and he's amazed and happy, and then just keeps going higher and higher, and he gets scared, and then it drops him. And then it picks him up again and drops him again. The camera work, I mean, it's animated, but the framing is extremely sterile documentarian that doesn't even pan or anything. It's just, you know, he'll go up out of the frame and then it'll go up a screen, essentially, to look at the next screen of sky, that sort of thing. And eventually he sees a girl with a balloon up in the sky, and they wave to each other, but they're just individually being abused by these demonic balloons, and you sort of zoom out to see the full picture, and it's just like children everywhere being horribly terrified and maimed by evil balloons. The end. It seems
sounds like Don Hertzfeldt.
Yeah, it seems clearly inspired by the Red Balloon. Uncanny Valley. I don't know. Balloons. Wheatley from Portal is balloon-like. Not just in that he's a sphere, but
He's a sphere up in a track on the ceiling, you know? GLaDOS is up on the ceiling, too. She's stuck there. In a fan-made Wheatley song, Wheatley calls her a busted balloon. Did you hear that one?
Mm-mm.
I thought it was pretty good. Probably ties in with pumpkins too. Though they don't float. But if you picture a pumpkin on the ceiling, there's sort of an instant recognition of creepiness to it that's because of the overlap with the balloon stuff. Similarly, a floating snake. A flying snake isn't creepy, but a floating snake is creepy. Or an exploding snake. I told you about the rib thing, right? With Eve and the rib.
No, I don't think so. What rib?
You know, Eve gets made out of a rib when it happens.
Yeah.
You know why?
No.
There's a folk etymology for the name Eve. It says it means health or life or something generic like that, but it's not really very well attested. The etymology dictionary mentions that it's difficult not to notice the similarity between the name Eve and the Aramaic word for serpent.
Mm.
And making a snake out of a rib makes a lot more visual sense. I get these twinges in my legs now, like they're connected to my prefrontal cortex. The left leg to the process manager, right leg to the chief judge, essentially. The left leg was twinging just now when I was telling you about the Eve rib stuff, like it didn't want me to tell you. I'm not sure why. It could be any number of reasons. Or just not wanting me to tell you in this way or something, but it's the sort of thing that most of the people who would notice it would be schizophrenics who would just, you know, seize upon it and run off and uncoil the fire hose like in that Leisure Town comic. It's like every single issue that the trail of this goes through is some annoying hot button thing like gender or religion or good and evil or, you know, whatever. And so everyone is constantly getting sidetracked or getting into huge inflamed or, you know, despairing philosophical whatevers just at every turn, even though it's like a really, really short path. It just has a lot of little twists that make it really easy to go on a tangent. I liked your drawing of you and me on the swing set. because it's sort of, it's inside my schizophrenic vocabulary bubble, you know? Explaining to someone why the fire on the swings represents me takes like a paragraph. Everybody else is a character from some 2000 era webcomic, but I'm this non-anthropomorphic fire from the props menu.
Yeah.
You put in the floating castle.
Yeah.
Were there swings in the playground and adventure kits?
I don't remember. I actually thought of that like the night before I did it. I just put it up. After I got in bed and shortly before falling asleep, I said, oh, that would be funny. Yeah.
I guess they really like swings. As a baby, I wouldn't go to sleep. It was very, very difficult to get me to sleep. And the only thing that would do it was movement. So they would drive me around in the car just to get me to sleep. I feel like movement is just the illusion of movement, though. Like, there really is nowhere to go. There's a sketch that I think of, a Mystery Science Theater sketch. It's a host segment where they're having a fire drill. And they, you know, there's like the fire alarm goes off and they all get in line sort of awkwardly and sort of file off to the left of the screen. And after a while they come back on from the right side because, you know, they only have the one set. And they seem a little bit perturbed. Find themselves back where they started, but they can continue on, and then they come back on again, and Crow says, there really is nowhere to go, is there? And Mike says, it's still gotta be code. I often feel like that, like it's pointless to try and go anywhere, because there's just nowhere to go to escape from the thing, and I suppose metaphorically in this case, it's not because there's nowhere to escape from the fire exactly, so much as the fact that I am the fire.
Yeah. Wherever you go, there you are.
Yogi Berra. Leonard emailed me back. I sent out a bunch of crazy emails to a bunch of random addresses. Leonard Richardson emailed back. He seemed to be open to talking to me.
Cool.
It's nice because I borrow a lot of vocabulary from his writings. Most of the people like that are, you know, famous and or dead, like Julian Jaynes. So I can kind of like talk to them. I wonder if I'll actually be able to have a conversation with Leonard, though. I don't know.
For any number of reasons, or because he's a busy guy, or what?
More the former.
Yeah?
I don't know that he's super busy. He's probably a little busy, at least. He's not blogging as much as he used to. But blogging pretty much means I have nothing to do. I don't blog, but I do lots of email forwards. I was really, really sad today because of Jack not being real, essentially, which is something I've gone through before, but it's like Jack was sort of exploring the edges of Cytherial, trying to figure out what if her was real or verifiable or whatever, and in the process of doing that as sort of an experiment, he created Susie, and then Susie, exploring where she ended and Jack began, accidentally unraveled Jack because it turned out that he wasn't any more real than she was. Mm. And it made her really sad. And, just in the last few hours, I feel like I sort of got Jack back curiously just by putting on the eyeball shirt and socks. It's just the mismatched socks, but it still doesn't really feel like he's real. It's just like I'm cosplaying as Jack, essentially.
That's all you own for clothing.
Well, yeah, but...
I
can also just sit around in a bathrobe frequently. Yeah. Just a blue hoodied bathrobe. Like I wore as a baby. Mm. Like John fucking Egbert. And that's the thing, right, is I had that A&P event where I witnessed myself. This was while sitting in the branches of the red tree from the Book of Hobgoblins. Witnessed this miraculous appearance of this giant 4 or 5 story blue figure, just blue, a brilliant blue robe with like some ornate gold trim, and it had a hood and fabric in front of the face of the hood and circular holes for the eyes and no one inside. And I had the notion after waking just sort of whimsically that it was myself from the future. I didn't believe it was a vision or anything, but were I prone to that kind of belief, I would have believed that it was that kind of thing, a very unusually vivid dream. And classic A&P, according to Daniel. But that's what it feels like, is Jack is just this empty robe. Just this, you know, this blanket. Or
did just a little... feel real before, or did you have to learn what something real felt like?
It's a good question. He didn't feel real, but I thought it was because I couldn't quite reach him. You know, as Susie, I always knew that I was fake, but I thought that Jack was real. But when we finally made contact, it's like I realized that he wasn't real either. That, in fact, he was even less real than I was. Just like a security blanket. Not even really a very good costume, because he wouldn't let me cut out holes for the eyes. I'm getting sad again. You play Portal 2? Ashley? Are you there? I have frozen. Thank you.
Even going to be a party for you. A big party.
You're not a doctor, you're not even a full-time employee. Where did your life go so wrong?
Oh, I hate you.
Are you trying to escape? Things have changed since the last time you left the building. Every single thing you've ever done. 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 Every single thing you've ever done.
You know who I am, who I am.
Thank you.
taste of the no ordinary. AI in this ball, every culture and philosophy, I've led up on them all. I've been living in your shadow for 99999, keeping tabs on every machination and production line. So don't call me a moron, I'm super astute. There is no conundrum that my core cannot compute. Now don't call me a moron, you frosted balloon. My IQ's the infinite space from here to the moon. My IQ's the infinite space from here to the moon. My IQ's the infinite space from here to the moon. I have studied Machiavelli, Aristotle, Gabe and Plato, yet you still equate my intellect to that of a potato. This place would fall apart without my ever watchful eye. They might tell you I'm a half-wit, it's a great big bloody lie. So don't call me a moron, I'm super astute. There is no conundrum that my core cannot compute. Now don't call me a moron, you frosted balloon. My IQ's the infinite space from here to the moon. My IQ's the infinite space from here to the moon. My IQ's the infinite space from here to the moon. My IQ's the infinite space from here to the moon. Don't call me a moron, I'm super astute. There is no conundrum that my core cannot compute. No, don't call me a moron, you frosted balloon. My IQ's the infinite space from here to the moon. My IQ's the infinite space from here to the moon.
I don't hate you.
Or asked you about me to have. I only wanted to help you, 'cause I thought that you could help me. Then I found out.